Good morning. Good day. How are you? Hi, I'm Ms. Llewellyn. I'm an author. I have works out on Amazon. Several worlds, the 12 Sexters world, the Orkai Warbri world, and the Claiming Starlight Apocalypse Keys world, with standalone books that are set in the same world and a little bit interconnected, especially in the 12 Sectors. This story that I'm reading today is chapter 4 of a fantasy, romantasy, as we are calling them now, epic in a way that it's long and detailed and the world is huge and massive. I am not finished with this. This is an in-progress story and you can actually read along on my Ream, the link in the profile or in the description you'll find. You can read along and I'm up to chapter 18 on this book, but I have been editing the first part of it a lot. I'm still in editing. You will hear as you listen, maybe you'll drift off in complete boredom because of some of the info dumping and that I haven't quite got everything arranged the way I want. Now, as a writer, I am a pantser. I write I just start writing. And when it is a huge detailed world and I don't take good notes, I get lost and I'm very repetitive. And also I do some of that info dumping, which means I'm giving information about the world and the characters in blocks rather than spreading it out and thinning it out so that it's more interesting, or putting it in the dialogue or the conversations or even the action to make it more alive. I do telling instead of showing, basically. And some of that happens because I don't know where the characters are and which the characters are going to be. It's evolving. This is a living story, an intuitive story. Am I an intuitive writer? I'm not sure. Good morning, everyone. So I'm going to start writing or reading. And that's just my whole process. Chapter 4, Annika. You can listen to the other chapters on my podcast, Stories for Adults. That link is in the profile, or you're already listening to it. As I record it, I am also on TikTok. And so you can come and listen to my recording and my storytelling live, but I tend to do it in the morning. It is 8:00 in the morning Pacific time where I'm at. Okay, we're going to start. Chapter 4, Annika, Sick Again. The moon was a half coin in the sky, all pretty and silver. My feet started doing that thing as I stood at the sink in Jack's kitchen. Plates, mugs, cups, forks, my apron wet, my head itching from sweat. I hopped from foot to foot. I could hear the three-man band in the main room playing music for my half-sister to dance to, and the last thing I wanted was to be dancing with her. But I couldn't hold still. "Boy, you break a dish, you're going to pay for it with an extra work day," Jack said from behind me. He had a big cask of his fine ale on his shoulder. The yeasty smell of it, fresh from his brewing cellar, crawled up my nose and into my throat, making me want to gag. He didn't stay to chat. I heard the door swing as he left this part of the kitchen. Jack's place offered beverages and a few food choices, prepared behind the long bar and served by a couple of the farm women. The big sink was in the farthest back. The half of the kitchen space taken up with storage, cups, casks, and a few food goods. Back here, I avoided the nightly crowd, and I couldn't be more thankful. The weird was happening again. Spending some time thinking on it, after my last adventure emptying my guts in the toilet box, I realized the pins and needles had happened more than that one time. In fact, I could count each instance on one hand, but the last was the worst, and I needed it never, never to happen again. Got to do something. This was bad news. The last nasty purge stayed with me for days. I didn't want to repeat. No more mineral oil. But I had to get this feeling out of my body. Leaving the sink, I went to Jack's shelf of spices. I knew he kept some astringent for wounds there, next to a dusty bottle of 10 spice. Maybe he had something for tingles. I found a stomach purge, squeezed behind the pepper mill, that would make everything come up quick and fast. Mouth first. Not thinking too hard about it, I took the bitter stuff. It went in fine. Barely tasted it. A few minutes later, my stomach twisted in my belly like a dirty wet wash rag, and things started to move. Oh no. Hand covering my mouth, I rushed to the slop bucket, and the spew of my churning stomach leaked through my fingers before I could bend over the thing. Oh, well, that was another fail. My efforts to cure myself got me 10 minutes of spitting bile and hacking phlegm. I'd never been so cleaned out in my life. When I raised my head and wiped my mouth, all I could smell was sulfur and ash. My feet were hot when they shouldn't be. I looked down at my leather shoes to see if they were on fire. Nothing, nothing. I was imagining things. But my limbs from my toes to my ankles tingled, and above that was a growing pain, a weird feeling in my bones, like they were being used as drumsticks. Hot turned cold and crawled up my body to my belly towards my chest. I'm going crazy. But Knowles don't go crazy. Our race birthed only rational, earthbound, forever void, and sturdy as rock. Knowles had not a lick of anything special about them. We're a plain bunch without a magical bone in our bodies. Not even intuition. Everyone knows that. I know that. And I know how to behave like a proper Knoll citizen. This wasn't proper. This very improper thing attacked me from the outside in, from the floor up. Was anyone else feeling it? Were others being similarly attacked? I needed this thing to go away. As far as I knew, there were no magic users or magic detectors like the patrol in Little Indio. None for months and months. Not since they dragged off a farmer's pretty daughter. Since patrols kept tracked and already had the wife, and that girl was the last actual witch for miles and miles, they had no reason to come here. My stepsister's little trickle of pretty wasn't enough to register as anything but an attractive void, and they turned away from her horse face whenever they saw her, no matter what she did for their attention. It couldn't be magic messing with me. Little Indio was played out. Mined so deep of every resource that an entire forest and everything good in it had died. As the cities grew, there was less and less native magic to go around. Whenever anyone found some, in whatever form, the patrol carted it off immediately to where it could be protected or do the most good. Some of the better-off folk in town had machines. The mayor's house even had lights powered by Ilium batteries. But there was no magic here. So, what was happening to me? It scared the puke out of me in more ways than just the purge. I was losing it. Fine then. I was born crazy. I knew how to deal with crazy. There was always water on the hearth in the other room in a giant kettle that was refilled via pipes outside the pub. I grabbed the pail I used for dishwater. Purging didn't work. Washing the heat could do it. Yes, everyone told me I should wash. That it was good for me. Hot water cleaned things. Maybe I had to do something. I didn't want to feel this thing, whatever it was. Boy, Jack eyed me with suspicion when I walked through the doorway. I need hot water. Hurry it up. His forehead bunched and he pursed his fat looks at me in a Jack frown. The pub was busy. The servers were out there back and forth, and there were at least 15 male heads around the tables and in 3 booths. Oh, look! It's Jack's pretty boy. I ignored the drunk. He was a man I knew. We'd worked the trees and Califera farms together as kids, and in spite of shared childhood memories, somewhere along the way the Blick had forgotten that I was female. People always forgot me. I liked it that way. "Come here, pretty boy," a guy at the same table slurred. "And there's the dick," I said out loud. They like to travel in pairs. I ignored them both and went to get water. "How come that boy is so pretty? You sure it's a boy?" Man 2 asked his partner. "Nobody's sure. We should go find out," my nemesis from childhood answered. I didn't know his name anymore. Even above the music from the corner and the conversation at the other tables, I could hear the benches scrape the floor when they scooted out of their booth. They stumbled over, shouting at me, "Hey, boy, girl, if you got a cock or girl parts, show us." I poured the hot water, protecting my bare skin against the pipe spigot with my sleeve and keeping my back to them, listening, deciding what to do. Bradonna was upstairs. She wouldn't be here to stop me. And Jack was behind his bar. He didn't do two things at once very well. Serving customers and actively talking to them at the same time was about all the doings at a time he could manage. I was on my own, left to my own devices. The tingle I had been feeling flashed hot, a tangle of vines in my chest tightening into a ball of burning, cold pressure. With the idiots bearing down on me, that pressure felt like a rage needing someplace to go. This was going to get ugly, and I had a hard time caring or finding a good reason to stop myself from doing something stupid. "I gotta be reasonable," I said out loud, reminding myself. "Dick and Blick are just here to drown away the day. They are blowing off steam." My own words sounded like important advice, even to me. I knew what I should do. This was reasonable. I could do reasonable, like any dull, even-tempered gnoll would do reasonable. "Say something there. You talking to us? Do I know you, pretty boy?" asked the Blick, who should know me. "How do I know what you know? But by the looks of you, I can say I doubt you know much, right?" I gave him a thorough examination from over my shoulder, searching for intelligence. "Pity, I don't see anything." "Let's see what you got," he reached out, getting close enough to take in my smell. "What in the shadow damn days is that reek?" Keeping my filled bucket between us, I turned to face him fully. The full effect of my scent was a lovely thing. I could see the man's eyes start to tear up. "You want to know what I am, then, do you? Well, it will cost you a copper. I don't give peeps away for free. You got chips?" He looked at me with confusion. "I got copper chips," said the Dick. I got between them. The Blick turned green and the Dick went for his pockets. At the same time, my fresh, hot water sloshed over their legs. They shouted as the scalding hot liquid soaked through the cloth of their pants. Dick swung for me. My smell was getting to him, too, finally, but he was holding his breath. I emptied the pail on them both before hitting Dick in the head with it as he curled into pain. The ruckus was enough to get Jack bellowing. I could feel the emotional surge of his thick energy at my back, a barely contained inhuman element of him he worked so hard to hide. He hated anyone mucking up his place, but his natural impulse would make him attack the two drunk troublemakers first. Jack could move fast when he was angry, legs eating up the space. The two landed yodels were behind me, one hand reaching out and catching the back of my shirt. Jack stepped right over me to get to them without missing a beat. Their drunk, fuzzy heads didn't even see him coming until he was there. Whoever had the back of my shirt let go. Time for me to leave the scene. A woman called my name. From the corner on my left, I saw Bradonna by the stairs with the shadow form of a customer at her side. Her purple and gold skirts were the only colors in the room. No time to answer. Jack wasn't the forgiving sort. He'd come for me next and enjoy every moment of it. I had enough of his bruises. I ran for the kitchen without thinking, as if that known place was safety. The unwashed dishes laughed at me, and I knew better than to waste time laughing back at my poor choices. I don't like to use Jack's front door anyways, so this had to be my escape. The back door was wood paneled and not holed, with a rickety appearance, but it had an old-fashioned puzzle lock. from pre-landing days. Ancient safety measures were the worst. I was trapped as Jack had it locked. The 2 damn years working for the pubmaster, and I still couldn't figure it out. Puzzles and I didn't agree. I could hear Jack stomping and yelling. Dick and Blick had put him in a smashing mood. Everyone could be angry at me all they wanted. I wasn't taking the blame for what drunk idiots started. The farm wives would let them paw and pester, glad to be here, I think, rather than at home with their children and dissatisfied men. My stepsister invited attention like that with her witch-style clothing and encouraging smile, but not me. It was the last thing I wanted. Who did Dick and Blick think they were? Why did their dangling bits and their wide shoulders give them the right to be ugly and think they could touch me, insulting me like I don't matter? Nobody got to treat me like that. Go get to the alley. Get outside. My inner voice and I rarely agreed, but this time it pushed me hard. I grabbed onto the door, ready to break the damn thing if I had to, heaving and pushing with my urgency. The latch clicked, and I fell through, right into doom. Chapter 5. Annika. Sulfur, coal, smoke and ash. Natural, powerful, old magic. Shit. A long, wet dog tongue licked my face, and I could feel her. Hear her. The dark-furred, shadowy animal. There were 5 of them. I knew it without looking. 5. We should be 6, they said all at once. But not words. This pack that was missing a piece of themselves. One of them had died. I knew that, as obvious as if the one trying to lick up my nose were missing a paw. I shook my head, trying to escape. Oh, dirty, she said in my head. They all said it, this odd, inhuman sound vibrating between my ears. Artfully unwashed, I said, and pushed the big square muzzle away. Her canine teeth were so big they fit stark white outside her black lips. She was the alpha leader of her pack. 1, her name echoed in my head. It meant first, mother, leader, and mistress, all wrapped up in 1 simple word. Too strong for me to push away, she chased my face, pouring out thoughts as she greeted me doggy fashion with a pink tongue in up my nose. Gross. Oh, this was a heap of trouble. This was the tingle in my feet, and that cold, hard knot in my chest must never, ever unravel, transform into pleased satisfaction at the sight of these doomed dogs. A quiet, hissing yes of agreement with the hound. 1 took place inside my head, against my will. My body relaxed as the dogs circled around me, their feet padding soft on the wet stone cobbles of the alley between town buildings. I should be running, screaming, stopping this. This was the worst possible thing. Magic. Fucking magic dogs. They were all listed in my mother's book under creatures dark and light heading. I'd spent so many days and nights thumbing through that book, it lived in my head. Maybe that was why their presence, the hound snuffles and snarls and smell of them, consumed my senses with a familiar sense of home. In my most undeniable center, I recognized them. They pressed in around me, big hunters with fur darker than the night, as friendly and happy to see me as a litter of fluffy puppies greeting their master. I'd never had pets. The only dogs I knew barked at me with tails tucked as I walked by their yards. Who could afford pets, especially Magellan ones, of pure native magic? And these were not typical Magellan. Oh no. These were much worse than that. Hounds. Shadow hounds. Doom hounds. Hell hounds. There had been any names before that they weren't central to the one continent. There were stories of them, of these exact 5 from all over the world. Stories the consortium gathered, hoarded, and erased with deadly efficiency. They were said to be the sentinels of the Shadow Ancient, like a poison that killed when inhaled. Their mere presence was deadly. No one got looked in the face by Doomhounds. "Kazviz Magda," I whispered to them. One put her paw on my thigh, leaning forward, but I could cry out at the pain of her claws digging through my pants into my skin. She pulled back. "Sorry, sorry, gentle," she said. "Gentle," the others echoed. "No, no, no, I'm human. I'm null. I have to be a null. I had to be afraid of these horrifying nightmare creatures. They shouldn't be wagging their tails. I shouldn't be helplessly putting my arms around one and pressing my face into her fur, inhaling the warm brimstone and spruce scent. We never met. Yet, they knew me, and I knew them, all of them, instantly. They were mine, and I was theirs, a dangerously insane connection forming before I could stop it. The door was still open from the kitchen. I felt Jack's shadow. He made a noise behind me. If a bull ever came to the edge of a cliff and accidentally jumped off it during a rampage, that might be the sound that matched the horrified baritone squawk that came out of Jack's chest. "What have you done, Annika?" That was the first time he'd ever used my name. I didn't even know he knew it. The man didn't stick around to answer his own question. The door slammed shut and the puzzle lock snicked shut behind me. The alley behind Jack's place and the butcher shop was not an area I really considered safe. On busy nights, drunks who passed out in the pub or ran out of money congregated here. Outside the pub, they had no reason to pretend to be decent people, and with the ale stripping away all their common sense, they forgot how. I came out here to drop the slop or use the poop house, but I knew Ben better than to linger. Along with the hounds, there were three elegant duos parked at the mouth of the valley. The two-wheeled machines were made of magically forged metal, leather, and wood, and powered by magic. They could run on Ilium, but these ones didn't. I could always tell the difference, but that was another secret I kept locked away in the knotted mess of cold hidden inside of me. Ooh, this was bad, so bad. This wasn't just a bad serving of fate, but so much worse that I had to find a way to get out of the alley, away from the duos, away from these hounds. I had to do it as fast as possible. I didn't see any people outside with us, but someone parked those machines here. Gossip about the bounty hunter had been floating through the markets in Jack's place since his first sighting. What did he want? What was he here for? What would he take? He and his men had duos like that. I'd seen them once, driving past the Miller's place before dawn, leaving the forest on one of the old roads like a trio of ghosts. I hadn't seen the hounds, but they were shadows. That didn't mean they hadn't been here. I got to go. My hands pushed Wend away. She was wearing a collar made of metal and magic enticingly warm against my fingers. A devious, witch-powered, mage-crafted thing that I wanted nothing to do with. Okay, I am in the middle of Chapter 5, Sulfur, Coal, Smoke, and Ash. And I'm recording this for my podcast, which I will share again. So if you missed it and you want to listen to the whole thing, you can always listen to the upload on my on Stories for Adults, which you can listen to anywhere. It's even on Audible. I mean, my goodness. This is my rough draft, work in progress, copyrighted and owned by me. All content of this podcast is owned by me. Yada, yada, yada. Okay. Nice. Here we go. I'm going to scoot back a little bit. I didn't see any people outside with us, but someone parked those machines here. Gossip about the bounty hunter had been floating through the markets and Jack's place since his first sighting. What did he want? Who was he here for? And what would he take? He and his men had duos like that. I'd seen them once, driving past the Millers before dawn, leaving the forest on one of the old roads like a trio of ghosts. I hadn't seen the hounds, but they were shadows. That didn't mean they hadn't been there. I got to go. I pushed one away. She was wearing a collar made of metal and magic that was enticingly warm against my fingers. A devious, witch-powered, mage-crafted thing that I wanted nothing to do with. A long-legged pony-sized animal. One was not a lightweight. I pushed, she pushed back, as if to crawl inside my chest. The others did the same, doggy licks on every bit of exposed skin they could find, crowding me so I couldn't get my balance to stand up. Their actions matched the feelings of words that shaped in my head. Their words. Stay, pack, stay, pack. They spoke to me, and I understood them. I wasn't their lost sixth member, but I was connected to them, and they had already claimed me as their own. I wanted to panic. I needed to panic. Where in the dark depths was my panic? All my feelings were the opposite of what they should be. How could I panic when the Doomhounds felt so warmly familiar to me? The way my favorite blanket was familiar. Every natural impulse told me to lie down and let them crawl all over me, roll around in a pile of happy puppy laughter and welcome them. Can't. I can't do this. Don't you see? I can't be this. I moaned the words to remind myself how stupid this all was. It didn't work. It didn't work. They were beautiful. Incredible, and inexplicably mine. I felt fur and wet tongue as they shifted through shadows, going from corporeal to misty darkness and back again. One had burning eyes with inner blue flames. The other four were just as unique, yet matching. Pack. They told me their names, but it wasn't necessary. I knew all of them the moment I ran into them, and now I had to go. I had to go. Voices and the door of the pub and front opening and closing, rowdy customers, male voices that could just be one of Jack's regulars or the owners of the duos. Didn't matter. The risk of attention I didn't want was obvious. Using the back of the two dogs, Knox, Paw, and Scout, to pull myself upright, Drake's tail smacked me in the face, and one tried to knock me down again. Stay. You're not my protector, I crisply informed her, as with as much dignity as I could, as I stumbled under her weight and she showed me differently. She made a noise in a muffled, growling grumble, a dogging complaint. The beastie was no more intimidated by me than I was of her and her pack, but the men around the corner in front of Jack's place were another matter. I need to go. This won't work. You know how you have that magic collar, right? Somehow a mage had collared the guardians of one of the most feared and ancient, most feared and mysterious ancients, the very one rumored to be in the Proctor's control and trapped under one of his cities. Magic was a strictly controlled and monitored resource by the government in power. This was a truth that every person in the world now understood. On penalty of seizure of property, family members, and death. Otherwise, a mage that could openly use magic was a mage controlled by the government. The hounds sent me waves of comfort. The smallest male, Shade, lay down on my feet as if to trap me. More of the warm blanket feelings and fur surged. Male voices came closer. Bold and brave in the night because they never had to sneak around or worry about getting carted off to who knows where to do who knows what. There was no other exit in the alley than forward unless I climbed the neighbor's rotting boon fruit trellis. Stahl said he'd be here. He will be here, one man said. He's void slime, the other replied. Didn't say he wasn't, did I? He's also a greedy, sneaking coward who'd sell his mother's bed for profit. Yes, and that's why I liked him. Now I remember. He's not here now, which means he's wasting my time. The third voice, with a toxic, infectious rumble that went right through my entire body. Oh my. Oh my. that third voice. Time for me to go now. They were just at the center of the building, and I did not want to meet these men. I was going to brave the dangers of the trellis to escape it. Yep. The pack surrounded me. Stay, pack, ours, mine. Pack, stay, obey, obey, obey. Smooth, glossy fur, cold noses, nipping teeth that bit at my clothing, but were so careful of my skin. The pack had trapped me. Heart in my throat. I stopped being careful. Must escape. I threw myself against one, using Monoxpaw's haunches as a foothold to launch myself over the lead hound, away from their trap of loving welcome. I pushed up, over, the pack shifted as one, moving with me, and I landed on top of two of them. Fur in my face, sturdy backbone in my chest. They made no noise, but a clumsy exclamation of air escaped when I hit. What are you doing? The male voice went right through me, right through my middle, setting off sparklers. One watched me with sympathetic eyes. I glared back at her. Look at what you've done! One's ears didn't even have the shame to droop. But I felt a surge of, I did bad through all the others. They didn't like the waves of upset I was sending. One's eyes flicked to the male approaching us. I just knew the mage that had dared collar the Doomhound was approaching. The others ducked their heads, tails tucked guiltily and turned to shadow. Glowing flames, their eyes blinked at me. The dark voice spoke again. I asked you a question, girl. He was right there, behind me. I was dressed as a boy, plain and dirty, just another poor motherless child struggling through life in Little Indio. My clothes were discarded men's things I'd stolen off of wash lines, baggy, patched, restitched. I was covered from head to toe. Apparently, my attempt at androgyny had failed. I froze. No escape. With no answer given, the hunter came closer, step by menacing step. He was not pleased, and the hounds answered that, surging around me as I trembled in my shoes from the threat, protecting me like a pup of their own that they'd discovered in the wild. Their forms went to cold shadow and back to heated living flesh and back again, conflicted in their response. Up against my left side, I could feel shades stiffen and thicken and grow. Doomhounds had three shapes, one for hunting, one for living, and one for killing. It would not be good for anyone if Shade took his killing shape. The book said they couldn't shift back from that without eating something. With no idea what their master would do to them, I couldn't let them defend me. The lead alpha was collared with magic. I couldn't imagine the amount of energy it took to do that to her. Mages were devious, selfish, greedy, dick-driven blockheads. I'd never seen that one of them worth the dirt that they walked on. I loved that Shade tried to protect me. It messed up my head, twisted the confusion that my reactions of panic and familiarity. My heart swelled, feeling a little possessive. He may have collared them, but they loved me enough to stand up against him already. No, I said to Shade. I couldn't let him shift. It's okay. He is not going to hurt me. It's okay. You're not going to hurt me, are you? Shush now, babies. It's all right. Heart pounding abnormally fast from the threat the man posed, I tried to take a deep breath to calm myself. Don't punish Shade, okay? I'm not doing anything. The light out here was not good, and I couldn't see his expression, but he and his men produced not happy vibes in waves. I continued to talk, my back to them, my hands in the fur of the necks of the animals closest to me. Don't punish them. I like animals, saw them out here. I should have brought a treat, but I don't think I could sneak enough for all of them. One of the other men laughed. Ha! A treat, eh? And what are you, little girl? The hunter said something in a rolling language. It brought the itch back to my feet, a command to the hounds, I thought, as they moved away from me. I hated that. I hated that he told them what to do, forced it with that collar on one. It felt wrong to me that a greedy, stinking mage used his magic to control these incredible beasts. He didn't deserve them. Why hadn't they eaten him? The hunter's hand curled around my upper arm. He shoved me towards his two pals. "Inside," he said. They dragged me inside. I tried to look behind me to figure out what he was doing, but they moved around the corner too fast, dragging me through the front door, within Jack's direct line of sight. Oh, damn. There went the job. So this is Chapter 5, Bredonna. Nobody says thank you anymore. Annika ran out of the room like a whirlwind of worthless. Bredonna watched Jack smash the farmer's head together and chase after her, his face bulging with fury. He'd kill her if he got a hold of her. At the very least, he looked finished, ready to make Annika pay for all the disrespect and mouthing off she'd done. A great excuse to finally get her doing the job he wanted. On her back, legs in the air, drawing in new customers. Bredonna told that girl to keep her trap shut, but Annika didn't listen. She would nod her head, shamefaced and sad, agreeing quiet was best. She said she liked to eat, and yes, Bree, she would do her share to keep a roof over their heads and food in their bellies. Hadn't she always? In spite of Annika's compliance, a horrible thing would flitter across her blue eyes, color bleeding to midnight, fury trapped in ice. Something wasn't right with the witch's daughter. Had never been right. Bredonna remembered it from when their parents were both alive. The two girls lived in three tiny rooms. Back then, bumping into each other in the tight spaces, aware of every sneeze, no one could miss the obvious. Annika's unnaturally early symptoms of energy raised the hair on the back of Bredonna's neck. Dad conned Annika's pathetic mother, Noelle, into his protection as a bespoke wife. But six-year-old Annika distrusted his smiling face from their first meeting. The pointy-chinned, pinch-mouthed, nasty child, Annika trusted no one. Expecting a little girl to change her attitude once Mikos tapped the mother and daughter under his hand, the girl only got bolder. Nothing happened like Bredonna thought it would. Instead, Da's muscles bunched tight with palpable anxiety whenever he had to be in the same room as Annika. He'd jump and pale when she spoke to him or looked at him. Instead of introducing her to all his friends, as he had her mother and Bredonna, he sent her from the room whenever they came over. Da was afraid of Annika. When Annika started her gleaming cycle and bled for the first time, Bredonna expected that all to change. At last, the girl would get what all women got. Da made his way in the world using others, and no one escaped that. But nothing happened. Bredonna asked him his plans, and Da sent her trembling across the room with a single slap. Doing his duty, Mikos took Annika with Bredonna into the town market to a visiting patrol for testing. It was Bredonna's third test, and she dressed in her best clothes, ready to be taken back to the city where she belonged. Instead, grim-faced and bored, the team waved both girls back past their black box magic sensors, giving them stamped cards at the end. They declared Bredonna a void and Annika a null. Bredonna couldn't believe it. The memory still angered her. Miko said nothing, did nothing, probably not wanting any attention drawn to his little illegal witch. How could this happen? The girl was strange, with weird magical things taking place wherever she went, but no one said a word about it. With light-colored hair and fine small features matching her native Indonesian mother, anyone could see that Annika was as native as any pure-born witch. But they carded her a null? Bredonna knew better. To keep the girl close, Bredonna got her a job with Jack, but the two fools were out to ruin Bredonna's life. They refused to do what they were told and keep life simple, ignoring all her efforts to help them both and keep them out of trouble. It would be so good to be done with these games. This town was draining all away Bredonna's tentacles. This town was draining away all of Bredonna's potential. one more offer to be a happy, safe farm wife, and her head would explode in a shower of shine the village would see for miles. They'd be sorry then. Unfortunately, she needed them both until she could escape this life. Leaving her customers with fresh ale, she went after Jack, entering the kitchen as he fixed the lock on the back door. His face was white, chest heaving gusts of panicked breaths. The bitch is done for me, done it. The patrol will hear of this for sure. What did you do to Annika? Did you kill her? Had he really gone so far? If the village found out Jack killed an unclaimed female, there would be an outcry. No one would let it pass. Treated like valuable cattle, with not enough women to go around, every female had a price tag, even Badana. The First Order demanded healthy women live in the cities. Murdering a woman got a man hanged. Murder was offensive. But raping her, if she was proven of age, got a man a pat on the back for sneaking one in. If Jack's foolishness brought the patrol for a murdering woman, everyone in town would be held accountable. It was one thing the proctor said was unredeemable. Do not waste resources. Bradonna had learned that from Da. Jack was making noises. A man worried for his life. How could Brudana find the right buyer if the stupid cow got herself killed by a barkeep with a temper? It was a tricky idea trying to sell something under the Unifier procurement teams, but they already thought they should own. With enough coins, she could set herself up in the city as some Knoll's pretty side dish. She had to look like she had something to be treated like something. The boy brought something to my door, Jack managed to explain. What? They have to be watching that bounty hunter. What are you talking about? The hunter. Them dogs. Them dogs drag a man to judgment, girl. They know what I've done. They'll do, and they're going to eat my guts for punishment. Call down the OMAC and wait to weigh my debts. That's a myth. The OMAC? If the Guardians exist, they don't care anything about debts, Bradonna said flatly. You know nothing, Bree, nothing. The patrol come. They're going to cut me open for my secrets. Bleed me dry, they will. I'm dead. I'm a dead man, and I don't deserve it. Jack was babbling, rubbing at his face, trapped in 100 thoughts at once, clearly taxing his poor brain. He huffed and puffed at the door, trying to get control. A dead man? Did you kill her or not? You make no sense. I don't understand. That tussle with the farm boys? That's no more than happens every night. What has you so shaken? Bradonna lightened her tone, trying to coax him in. He always liked it when she got soft and witchy. Was there something about the boy you didn't tell me? Jack didn't calm. Instead, at her touch, he went stiff and angry. What? You know Annika's not a boy. And you know she's a virgin. You know I need to take her to a city and get her a decent protector. Yeah. Yeah, you told me that. And you told me. You go, she goes. I help but get nothing, do I? Why a city? No First Order city full of Unifiers is a good place for a woman. If I'm going to die, I should know why.
Die?
Bradonna tried not to scoff and roll her eyes at the dramatics. Sky save her from fearful men. Jack nodded. There's only poor farmers here, or worse, men who have to hire on at farms, who will never have half a copper to their names. It's not a good place for women here either, Bradonna said, reasonable. Why was he saying this now? The bell signaling the front door chimed. Jack looked at the thing in the corner like it was a prophecy of death. They both heard Annika's voice at the same time, complaining and cajoling at full volume from the other room, talking to someone. You just manhandle with all your big and tough on little old me. I told you I didn't do anything. Your hunting dogs didn't do anything. Everything is fine, fine, fine. All fine and fit. You need to get your magic or scum hands off of me. Annika's voice went high whenever she was angry and afraid. Bradonna wanted to cover her ears from the stabbing pitch. Leaving Jack for the doorway of the washroom, Bradonna gained full view of the bar in the main room of tables and booths, the chairs going up on one side of the big hearth and down And, oh, the stair... Leaving Jack for the doorway of the washroom, Brianna gained a full view of the bar and the main room of tables and booths, the stairs going up the one side of the big hearth and the doorway to the back room. Everyone was watching the two well-outfitted strangers with Annika held between them. One blonde head swung toward Brianna, and a beaming high-class smile above an oiled and sent her a beaming high-class smile above an oiled beard. One of the bounty hunter's men, a city-born gnoll. Brianna remembered Gage. Private table upstairs? Only my bed up there, she reminded him. Back room, Addo. Let me light the lamps for you, Jack said from behind Brianna, using the Indonesian term of respect. That is something I need to change. So stiff with fear, his knees didn't bend, he passed her to lead the way. You do that, and the honeypot there can get us Jack's ale and steaks for men. None of that Udo, Gage said. And the spicy crunchy, like those, the man from the other side of Annika spoke up. You're an outsider. Don't you know those will make you shit fire? I don't recommend them. Let me get you some roast Udo. It has crunch, too. No? You sure? You aren't the smart type. You do what you want. Let me go. I'll get them. Annika dropped her weight as if to wiggle away. The girl never knew when to shut up. She was a little widow's pet, snapping at ankles at any hand that came near. Noelle, her extra sweet and agreeable mother, had been her opposite in every way. The two men looked down at Annika in surprise, then at each other. The bald guy, Brianna thought his name was Max. I can't wait to search this one. It's got huge balls. Want to make comparisons, Gage grinned. Yes, I do, Match answered the grin. Annika struggled, twisting in her clothing, kicking at shins. She'd get herself killed. Jack directed the men to the back room, used for storage in the occasional town meeting with the mayor and his cronies. There weren't any blicks around who could afford private. Watchers hooted encouragement and suggestion. Most of them thought Annika was a boy, a girlish one maybe, but a boy who deserved what he got. They couldn't grasp the idea that a woman would dare half of what Annika dared. Geared up in the city, quality leathers and wool, Gage and Max had purpose and capability. It made them dangerous. No one stood to interfere. These were outsiders and not welcome, but clearly they had a connection to the patrol. That air drew Brianna like a magnet. Opportunity always came with danger. Danger always came with a price. But she vowed she'd do anything to escape the death of poverty and boredom. She fingered her hair and loosed the laces on top as soon as the men followed Jack into the room. You were told to get food and drink. The craggy mountain frost of the command stopped Brianna in her tracks, skirts flaring, brushing the legs of the man who had crept up on her. I thought I'd help with the lamps. Not what you were told. Head and shoulders taller than her, face shadowed by his hat and hood, the man reeked an unapproachable threat. Yes, Addo. The chair left the room for anything but obedience. Her first time this close to the bounty hunter, she wanted to be close, but he was a building with all the windows snapped and latched. She knew to hold her tongue and rushed to get the drink, swinging her hips. But damn it, she knew his eyes didn't follow her. And that was chapter 5. Remember, this is a work in progress, written by Isoellen, copyrighted by Isoellen, owned by Isoellen, all of that. But it is also a bit of a mess, and I really thank you for listening to me as I alter and mix and match and delete and add and cut and all that stuff. I hope you enjoyed it. I love reading my work aloud and sharing it with you. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day.